This episode of Knife Talk is sponsored by Tormek. For your chance to win a T4 sharpening system, visit knifetalk.net to enter the draw. The winner will be chosen on our 10th show and will receive a Tormek T4 and a set of jigs to make your knives razor sharp. So welcome to Knife Talk. Today I'll be speaking with Liam from Hoffman Blacksmithing. Now Liam's not only just an all-round nice guy, but he's also a Forged in Fire champion. And he hand forges the most amazing knives and axes. So welcome to the show, Liam.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. It's really good to be speaking to you today. So let's set the scene. Whereabouts in the world are you?
I am in the Appalachian Mountains of North Carolina. It's the furthest northwestern tip right there bordering Tennessee. A lot of kind of mountain culture here. It's the highest elevation east of the Mississippi River in the United States. And so it's pretty quiet up here. Just keep to myself and make axes and knives.
And do you have your workshop at home, or do you have a separate place where you go to work? How does that work?
Right now, my workshop is at my dad's house. We're working on a new shop. I'm building a new shop right now on my own property. But right now, it's at my dad's house. It's the shop that I've been working in since I was 13 or 14 years old, and it's kind of evolved over the last 7 to 8 years. And I've pretty much just maxed out at this point. It's pretty, not high tech. It's just a wooden shack with a dirt floor.
So you've got the opportunity to build the dream shop now then.
Yeah. Cool. So I bought property, I guess it's been exactly a year ago, probably around this week, a year ago, I bought some land outside of Boone, North Carolina, and we're putting up a new shop and an apartment right now.
Very nice, very nice. So blacksmithing, it's an unusual hobby for a 20-year-old. How did that happen?
Well, it's not really a great story. I guess some people expect some sort of romantic tale or something like that. But when I was 13, I was simply bored one weekend. I think it was maybe a summer weekend or something. And, I mean, there's not much to do around here. And I don't know if you're familiar with this area or not, but there are a lot of artists and craftsmen in the Appalachian Mountains. And maybe that's because there's just simply nothing to do and people get bored and then you find something to do with your hands. So I was bored one weekend and I started just hitting a piece of metal. The first thing I hit was just a piece of aluminum and it was cold. And then that same evening, I heat up a piece of scrap steel in a campfire. And I just used things around the house and just got started right away. And then it just kept evolving from that. I had support from my parents and everything and discovered that I liked it, discovered that I wanted to do it for a business, not that I knew how. And it just grew organically to what it is today.
So did you have any formal education in blacksmithing at all?
No, I've had no formal mentoring or anything like that with blacksmithing.
Right. Okay. So who did you sort of look up to when you were learning the craft?
So when I was first starting, it was pretty much YouTube stars, stuff like that, like Trollsky, Walter Sorrells, guys like that. There were a few books that I was reading, but there wasn't really anyone locally that was doing it. There's a couple people locally, but I didn't really know them at the time. I was really young and I'm not a very outgoing person, so I don't go up and just meet people when I'm 13 years old, grown men.
Yes.
So I mean, there's mainly internet type role models and stuff like that.
Okay. So I mean, I'm not a blacksmith. I'm just a humble knife maker. So, you know, stock removal is my thing really. So the closest I get to changing the sort of composition of a metal is just the heat treating process. So if I wanted to get into hand forging sort of billets of steel or layering up my own Damascus, what words of advice would you have for a newcomer to blacksmithing like myself?
Well, I think a lot of the problem that people have is just getting started. A lot of people don't know how to get started and they keep waiting and waiting until they never do get started. And I think people are intimidated by maybe the tools that they think that they have to acquire or the money that they think that they have to spend to get started. But in reality, all you need to do is go out, find a heavy object that's an anvil, any hammer, pliers for tongs, and a piece of metal to hit on, and you just need to start doing it. Put hours and hours of practice under your belt, and then resources for you to go look at. I'm sure you already know a bunch of people on YouTube are doing instructional stuff, forums, Facebook, but you do have to be careful with what you do look at, because there's probably more misinformation out there on the internet right now about blacksmithing as there is good information.
Everyone's an expert,
Yeah. And it's hard to differentiate what is actually helpful and what is not. Some people have a hard time picking and choosing who to follow. So you just have to kind of go out there and do it and see whose advice you want to take.
Yes, yeah. Any books or courses that you could recommend at all?
As far as getting into it, beginning, well, depending on where you live, there's a few schools around me that do those types of things, trade schools, and then other blacksmiths like myself that do classes. I do one-on-one classes. I can't think of anything specific. Like, there's not just one thing to get that I know of, a book. I'm actually coming out with a book, though. I'm publishing a paperback, though, this year. It's really close. I'm just working on the aesthetics of the cover and everything right now.
Oh, cool.
And it is talking about – I don't talk about any techniques, how to do anything, how to make anything. I talk about things that I don't think are covered as much, which is how to set up a shop, how much money is needed, what tools you need, how long you should expect to get those tools. And then I have different shop budgets. So a $1,000 shop, a $3,000 shop, a $0 shop, and what you can expect to do in those shops, stuff like that. How to teach. I have a section on how to teach yourself, because that is difficult. Knowing how to teach yourself when you don't have someone else to teach you, how to be so self-motivated. So that's what my book's going to be about, kind of how to set up. And there's not as much information about that online as I think there could be. And I get a lot of questions every day on Facebook and Instagram from people who have not started blacksmithing but want to start. And they always ask me, how do I start, or how do I do this? It seems like it costs a lot of money. I really never, ever get anyone ask me how to make something. Like, it's always, how do I get this piece of equipment, or how do I actually start, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's cool. You're putting a resource out there to help people like me, and that's always going to be cool. So let's talk about your time on Forged in Fire. So overall, was that a positive experience?
Yeah, I'd say it was. It was an interesting experience. There's a lot more that goes behind it than you see on television, you know.
Did they temper at all? That's the biggest question everybody wants to know. You never see anybody tempering that anything.
Yeah, they made that unclear in the first couple seasons, and they're making more of an attempt to make that clear in the current seasons, that they do temper the blades. Because they make it out to be that, I don't know if I'm like voiding a contract here or talking about this, but they make it out to be that the first two rounds of the episode takes place in one day. And then, you know, that doesn't make sense, because the blades need to be tempered before they do the testing and everything.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's time in between there. And after the blades are hardened, they go into a heat treating oven that night for 400 degrees for 2 hours twice. And the length of the heat treating oven is what creates the length parameters for the challenges
right.
that they have.
I've got you. I mean, I've spoken to Walter Sorrells on the show, and he mentioned the heat there in the studio. It seems like that's a real problem for some of the contestants.
Yeah, it depends on when you film too, because they're filming all year long. Mine was in June, so it was pretty hot. One of the guys on my episode passed out, or almost passed out for a minute there.
Jeez. So how has that affected your business, becoming a Forged in Fire champion? Has it had a big impact on your business at all?
Yeah, it's had a great impact. It's definitely not the biggest thing that's ever happened. There have been bigger impacts from things that you wouldn't expect than from Forged in Fire. But it definitely hasn't hurt it at all, you know, becoming a Forged in Fire champion. It's more of just kind of like a personal achievement. Like, I can say I did that and everything. And I went there because I knew it was probably a good opportunity that I didn't want to pass up. You know, 3 years from now, if I had decided that I didn't want to do it then, but then 3 years from now, I decided I do want to do it. Maybe they're not even filming that anymore, or who knows. So I decided to just go on it. And I'm a really competitive, very competitive person. So it's my kind of thing.
Cool, cool, cool. So let's go back to your work. I've got a Grand Falls Brooks Small Forest Axe, which I love.
But against you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but I'm just been looking at your axes, and they seem to be of like even higher quality. I mean, have your designs evolved over time, or did you just hit the ground running with the current designs that you have?
No, my axes are an ever evolving thing, just like with any of my work. I started axes 3.5 or so years ago. Right about my senior year of high school, I was starting axes, but I had been making knives since I was 13, about 8 years ago. I started out with the axes, and the original axe that I made's got kind of a similar shape to the axes that I have now, but it's evolved a lot in every single aspect. And I was selling them all throughout the building process. So there's axes out there that people own that are just nothing like the current axes that I have. But, and I don't regret selling those earlier axes. It's something that I needed to do, I think, in my situation.
Yes. Yeah.
But I didn't, spend 3 years in a cave developing this ultimate axe and then one day released it. And it's been the same ever since.
It's just definitely been a natural progression, I assume.
Yeah, and I learn a little bit more about it, then I change a little bit one thing, and I look back at an axe that I made a year ago when I thought I was pretty hot stuff, and then I look at that axe and I'm like, wow, that axe has some serious issues. And I'm sure a year from now I'll look back on one of my axes now and see something that needed to be changed and whatnot.
Yeah, I think that's a natural thing for most makers, isn't it? Everybody wants to get better at what they do. And, you know, eventually you will become better, and you look back at your older stuff and think, yeah, maybe not a load of crap, but you just think, oh, I could do so much better now, you know?
Yeah.
So I need to get on your order list. So what sort of weight do you have for these orders at the moment?
Unfortunately, right now it's pushing 15 months.
Oosh. That's a nice problem to have.
Yeah, it's it's still not a good problem though. I mean,
yeah.
My shop is maxed out right now. If you saw the shop and then saw what we were producing in terms of quantity, I think your mind would be blown. I mean, I have, as to my abilities, I have maxed out my shop setting in terms of production as much as it can be. And we're basically just waiting to move into the new shop so I can reduce that lead time and start increasing volume.
Yes. Yeah. So is it just yourself in the shop, or do you have other people working alongside you?
I have one guy, Andreas, who works part-time with me in the shop. And then, one full-time person doing emails, logistics, all that stuff. And then another part-time person helping with the emails and everything as well. So
gotcha,
there's,
yeah.
Four of us, including me right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good point. I mean, how do you scale up a business which relies so heavily on yourself and on handcrafting, you know? It's got to be difficult.
Well, that's the big question. That's the really difficult part, and it's what I've been working on and still working on for the past I really started diving into increasing volume and everything last January, so it's been about a year and a half now that my goal is always increase quality, but you jump leaps and bounds when you first start, and then it slows down a little bit as the progression. You know, maybe my changes that I make today are really small, whereas changes 2 years ago were really big in the quality of the axe. So now the big changes are being made in increasing production quantities. You know, eliminating one heat in my process, if it takes me 10 heats to make an axe, is 20, you know, one heat is 10% of my production. It's 10% increased income. It's a huge thing. So trying to figure out how to maximize my space for production has been a fun challenge for me the past year or so, and then I've got some hopes for the next few years. I've got kind of a vision on what I want to do. I want to keep increasing production. I want to three or four times doing what I'm doing now, but I want to do that while still using machines that rely on a skilled operator.
Not that
there's anything wrong with making products that have closed die operations or CNC operations, but those operations are more heavily reliant on the engineer that designed those dies, or the CNC programmer or whatever that made that program, not so much the operator of the machine at that time. And I want to use machines that are reliant on the person operating the machine.
Yeah. And as you say, it's a completely different skill, isn't it? Scaling up via CNC and so on. I mean, the last show I spoke to Aaron Goff, and his setup it's incredible. But the amount of skill involved in setting that up is just way beyond me and way beyond most people, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot easier for me to go and invest $70,000 in getting drop forging dies made and just subbing it out to a company in Tennessee.
Mm.
I've looked into it. It would be so easy. But then the quality of what my brand is built on, it would be going against that. And I don't want to do that right now. There's been lots of makers who have done that and are really successful right now. And I don't look like down upon them for that. It's just their decision what you want your product to be. And that's not what I want my product to be.
Yeah, exactly. So are you finding that blacksmithing and knife making are becoming more popular as hobbies now? Are you hearing from more and more people getting into this as a hobby?
Yeah, it's, as you know, it's growing a lot. It's probably, I guess it's still growing. I don't know if it's hit its peak yet or not. Probably not. But over the last basically 8 years or longer, basically the time span that I've been doing this, it has kept growing and getting more popular. When I was first starting, the biggest, probably one of the bigger blacksmithing forums that were out there was iForge Iron. I don't know if it's as big anymore. There's been some others that have come in, taking its place. Mainly YouTube has made some of the forums obsolete, as well as the information you get on Facebook and Instagram. But it's always growing right now, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, yourself, did you ever consider a different career, or were you set along this path from that early age?
Nope, I'm very bullheaded. At 13 years old, I was going to be a blacksmith.
Mm. So did you go straight from school to starting your own business?
Yeah, I graduated high school in 2014. I didn't do college. But I mean, my senior year in high school, I was working 35 hours a week.
Wow.
And I already had somewhat of a, small client base and had most of my equipment set up. And so while I'm in high school doing this, I don't have any expenses. I can put it all straight back into the business, and it helped to grow the business organically. I didn't have to have any sort of help. And so by the time I'm out of high school and I do start getting expenses, I have most of the business stuff paid for.
Yes. So how did you sell your first product? If you come straight from school and you're out there making stuff, how was that first product sold? Is that sort of an online thing, or is it via locals? How does that happen?
I think I sold my first knife when I was 16 at a local craft fair. It was a knife. And so that was just at a show, people walk up and buy it.
Yeah.
But as it evolved and everything, like by the time I'm getting out of high school, I really don't have any. I mean, I've got a few local customers, but the area that I live in is very poor. I think the average income around here is $17,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And so most of the products that I make don't fall into the price bracket of local customers. So I have to put all of my business online. And by high school, I had already figured that out.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm starting to push Instagram and Facebook more and just learning marketing as I go and stuff. And I've got starting to get the website developed I think I got the website finished maybe a year after high school or something, and starting to put more effort towards online sales and everything, and not go to the shows because the shows aren't very profitable. Gotcha. It's kind of a thing of the past.
Okay. So, I mean, I really enjoy your Instagram, and your YouTube channel is brilliant too. But it seems that younger Smiths, such as yourself and maybe Alex Steele and the likes of these kind of people, they've really managed to make social media work for you. So how has social media played a part in the success of Hoffman Blacksmithing?
Well, it's cheap, easy. Well, not always easy, but it's cheap advertising. And anyone can do it as long as you put the hours into it. And there's a few things I've learned on Instagram specifically that probably relate over to Facebook and YouTube in terms of converting Instagram posts into sales and whatnot. And for me, for my brand, and this will probably apply to all other blacksmiths and bladesmiths and craftspeople out there, the customer is buying you, not the product that you make.
Yes.
I mean, they're buying you along with the product that you make. They're buying a story, and they're buying an experience. They're not just buying a 1999 axe from Walmart that they don't know who made. They don't know what the story is behind it. So when I'm focusing my Instagram posts, I do put personal life stuff in there. I put a hint of personal things in the descriptions and in the posts, and try to keep it on a down to earth level. I try to increase the frequency of my posts. So I found a direct correlation between the amount of posts and the amount of orders I get.
Right. Okay, that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, about a year ago, or maybe less than a year ago, I was posting on Instagram maybe 0 to 3 times a day. Just kind of, I mean, it wasn't a strict schedule. Mm. And then I decided that I was going to post every 2 hours.
Oh, geez.
So I put a timer on my phone, and every 2 hours I would post on Instagram. And my orders went from like maybe 1 to 5 axes a week to 35.
Wowzers.
And it was instant. It was like the first week that I did that, it was instant results. And that was a pretty interesting thing to see firsthand, that, the correlation between posts. Not that I post 2 hours anymore, because that got crazy. I couldn't keep up with it by myself. I mean, that's an insane amount of photos 7 days a week. So now I've got it to 3 times a day, and it's all I can do to keep up with that. I got to keep a DSLR in my shop and try to take photos, or I just take videos on my phone. Sometimes I slack on it, but at least I know, like, if I want to increase orders, this is what I have to do.
Yes, yes.
And it's interesting the different types of customers and different types of vibes that you get from these different social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Facebook, if you're a craftsman listening to this right now, I'll say that if you're advertising, doing your thing on Facebook, get a Facebook group, not a Facebook page or your personal page. Get a closed group. It's like, I don't know. I guess it's because there's like a sense of community, like you're in this closed group. And when you're in that group, you feel maybe more connected to the maker. Like I said, your brand is built on largely yourself. So people want to feel connected to that. So they join your group. And the brilliant thing about it is whenever I post to my group page, everyone gets notified. Whereas when you post to like my Hoffman Blacksmithing page, it just is in your feed. You don't get notified, and the person may or may not see that in their feed. And so my Facebook group has only like 4,200 people in it. And my Instagram is like 58,000 or something. I get more connection and more reaction from people in my Facebook group than I do my Instagram page.
Oh, that's really good to know, actually. So, and the fact that you're not reliant on, you know, Facebook's algorithms, it's going to everybody within that group. That's really
good. And I still have the Facebook page, but I don't work on it at all, because on Instagram, you just push post to Facebook and it will post to my Facebook page, my business page, automatically. So all you're seeing on my Facebook business page is my Instagram feed. And so I've got the group, the page, Instagram, and then the YouTube thing is something that I recently started doing, which was kind of like an extracurricular thing. Wasn't sure what it was going to do for me or anything. But I started posting videos twice a week on YouTube and got really good responses from that. I found out that I had some customers that followed me on Instagram and Facebook, but they were kind of on the fence about buying an axe. And then the YouTube videos, for some reason, put them over the fence, and they decided to purchase an axe after seeing the YouTube videos. And I had people come up to me at the Blade Show, multiple people tell me the same thing. And I thought that was really interesting, that YouTube is what caused them to do that. And maybe that's because they can see me on a more personal level, like working, like they can see it happening. You know, they see the experience and they like to buy that experience.
Yes, it sort of builds that level of trust, I assume, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a way that Instagram and Facebook doesn't.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so I won't go too much into your sort of personal life here, but so how do you relax away from the workshop?
Well, there's really not much of that, but the things that I do outside of the shop would be mountain biking, hiking, swimming, camping, stuff like that. I like doing backpacking trips and stuff like that. I want to get into bike packing.
Never heard of that.
Yeah.
Never heard
of that. So it's just like backpacking, but on a bike, long distance.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
So I want to try stuff like that. But I mean, there's not much time away from the shop, so it's very limited personal life time.
Yes, I can imagine. So here in Europe, I tend to spend my time either in the UK or in France, but I find it very difficult to get steel tools and consumables and so on. So I often end up importing stuff from the USA. So yourself being in the USA, you are, as you say, you may be a bit cut off from a lot of the bigger cities. Do you have suppliers locally? How do you get hold of the stuff that you need?
Nothing locally. Everything is online. And all of the specialty steels, the knife steels and the tool steels, I don't know if there are really any retail stores where you can purchase that. Your 1018 and your A36 mild steels, you can, you know, get at a welding supply store pretty much anywhere in the country.
Yeah.
But all of the axe stock I order online, I'll get 2,000 pounds at a time, just delivered on a crate, you know, from a tractor trailer. And the wood for the axe handles, the lumber, comes from a lumber yard that's an hour and a half away from me, and that's pretty much the closest lumber yard for that. But there's really nothing locally that I can get those types of supplies from. It's all online.
Yeah. Well, you say nothing locally, but it's all within your country.
We are fortunate that way.
Yes, yeah. So I just want to give a very quick shout out, actually, to Zach from Preferred Abrasives, because they're the guys I get my abrasives from. And even though it's come from the US, it's still cheaper to buy from them than it is from anywhere else in the country. in the world for me, which is just crazy. So I'm going to wrap up with a couple of questions that I ask all of my guests. So the one piece of kit in your workshop that you couldn't live without, then what's next on your shopping list?
Well, for production, the thing that I couldn't live without would be my hydraulic press.
Yep.
I mean, people complain about my wait time now. Think about it if I didn't have the press.
But think of the arms you'd have.
So, and the next thing that I am really dying to get is it's called a copy lathe, an axe handle copy lathe or copying lathe.
Right.
It makes axe handles. So basically, because right now it takes me longer to make an axe handle than it does to make an axe head. And so that's like the biggest, most important thing that I need to address right now is increasing the speed of my axe handle making process. So that machine is the next thing I need to get. Basically, it roughs out the handle on a lathe, and then I go and finish it out on my sanding drum like I do now, and I'll get the same end product.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that was next on your shopping list, wasn't it? So where do you find your inspiration?
Where do I find my inspiration? Well, I find for the axe production, because the axes are really a whole separate thing from my knives, a whole separate mindset. With my axes, it is all about business and increasing quantity, of course, while not compromising quality. But it's like, so inspiration for that type of thing, I get from business people, people that don't blacksmith at all. Just, I mean, I'll be driving down and I'll see a million-dollar house and like, wow, that's inspirational. And, or, you know, I'll see someone driving a really nice car and say, that's inspirational. Or anything like that. People that are really successful and in their field, no matter what it is. I was watching this morning, I was watching on Facebook, the Red Bull, it was dirt biking. It was called the Hare Challenge or something in Austria. And these dirt bikers are at the top of their game. And they, you know, they've practiced all of their life to do this thing. And it's just a grueling race. And so watching guys like that come out and be successful is inspirational to me. So things like that, I find inspiration from other successful people in terms of axe making and production. Now, in terms of knife making, I look up to other knife makers that are doing pieces of art, because my knife work is not geared towards production. It's, most of them are one-offs. It's more artistic, and I'm, you know, I'm going for pure beauty, yes, as well, yeah, as function. So some other knife makers that I look up to would be like Jason Knight, Michael Quisenberry, Sam Lurkwin, Nick Wheeler, guys like that.
Nick Wheeler's,
I can't think of everyone.
Nick Wheeler comes up on the show every single episode. Every time.
That's because he got an early kind of, I mean, for the guys that are in like, my generation of blacksmithing.
Yeah.
Who were learning around the same time I was, his information was out there on the internet. He was one of the biggest players in educational videos. So a lot of the people that were learning blacksmithing at the same time I am have all seen Nick Wheeler. And so he's kind of established himself. I mean, everyone knows Nick Wheeler in the knife making, yes, community.
Yeah. I've been trying to get him on the show, but he's just too busy, always too busy, which is completely understandable. You know?
Playing with his dogs. Yep.
So if people want to know more about you, about your knives, about your axes, and even about your amazing swords, which I've just been looking at the swords on your site as well, which are just incredible work. But where can I find out more about you?
Well, the best place is my website. I mean, everything that I have about me is public. Instagram is Hoffman Blacksmithing. My Facebook is Hoffman Blacksmithing. YouTube's Hoffman Blacksmithing. Website's Hoffman Blacksmithing. So if you just Google Hoffman Blacksmithing, you can find out pretty much anything you need to know about me or my business. But if you have any other questions, then you can email me or Karen at any time, or give us a call.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully you'll be inundated with people now asking you the same old questions, such as, how do I get into blacksmithing?
Yeah, maybe the book will put that to rest.
Brilliant stuff. Well, again, thank you very much, Liam, for taking the time out. I know you're a very, very busy man, and it really is appreciated.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thanks, Craig.